is Cecilia Kacik, the former state senator who represented Greene County. You are listening to WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking for one that I can't find. The one where the guitar plays so fine, 'cause that's the only song that my baby likes to hear.
Turn out to the WGXC Record Fair, Sunday, September 15th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Basilica Hudson, 110 South Front Street in Hudson, near the Amtrak station. There are still a few spots left for vendors. If you'd like to get a table, email info at wgxc.org. WGXC Record Fair coincides with the Basilica Soundscape, September 13th through 15th, an immersive, innovative weekend of art, music, and culture. Turn out for the WGXC Record Fair, Sunday, September 15th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Basilica Hudson.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Miles and Pepper of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening. This is Kevin Factor.
And this is Ben Hale.
And this is Foraging Ahead. Today we're going to be foraging into love. Mm-hmm. We don't have the man or woman who actually wrote the Book of Love with us tonight. But we do have the man who edited it, Ben.
That's right. I was the editor and translator of the Book of Love.
Yeah.
I translated it from the language of love.
Which is?
Into English.
What is the language of love, Ben?
Latin.
Latin is the language of love?
Of course, yeah. Latin's the language of, the gods and Satan, and the language of love. Everything is, you know, Latin is all, it's, if you have to say a magic spell, you say it in Latin, don't you?
No, I say it in English.
Well, do they ever work for you?
No.
Well, that's why.
Well, I guess the audio on this is not working quite the way I wanted to.
Is it turned up all the way on your device there? Because perhaps that is the explanation for the quietude of this song. Or maybe one of the other knobs on the switchboard there needs to be turned up.
Oh, well. So we're going to have to figure out the music. But
well, I really think that it might be the volume on the iPad there. It's, usually, at least on my iPad, the volume is on the side of it, on the side of the thing itself. There's two little buttons by which you can turn it up and down. You know, not on the on the long side, you know. Yeah, yeah. Either one of those. No, there's not a volume button. Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's it. Right there. That's the problem.
Oh. Chapter 2, you tell her. You never, 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 ever gone apart. In chapter 3, remember the meaning of romance. In chapter 4, you break up.
And
but you give her just one more
too,
chance. Oh, I wonder, wonder, who wrote the book of love? Who wrote the book of love? I wonder who. Yeah. Who wrote the book of love?
All right, well, Ben, who did write the book of love?
Well, there are many books of love. You know, my personal favorite. Platonic dialogue deals entirely with love. It's most people's favorite Platonic dialogue. It's one of the ones that I read in Greek a long time ago and translated. The Symposium.
Ah.
Yeah. And you know have you ever read The Symposium?
Pieces of it, maybe?
Well, you know, it's one of the most novelistic and kind of accessible and readable of Plato's dialogues. And so basically, you know, the plot of the Symposium is that it's the night after some big festival, and it's a bunch of philosophers sitting around. It's Socrates, Anaxagoras, Pausanias, and or should I talk in this other mic? How's that? Is that better? That sounds a lot better. You know, it's Anaxagoras, Pausanias, Aristophanes is there, and they're all sitting around, you know, they're all hungover because it's the night after the big festival. And Socrates says to everyone, how about we go around and everyone will give a speech praising Eros.
Eros,
yeah, the god of sexual romantic love.
Ah,
because you know, in ancient Greek, there are three kinds of love.
Ah,
there's Eros, which is sexual romantic love.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's philia, which is friendship. You know,
uh-huh. So like Philadelphia.
Yeah, Philadelphia means literally in Greek the city of brotherly love. Because and this is kind of a fun etymological thing. Phil means love,
right.
Philia,
right.
And Adelphos means sibling or brother. It quite literally means womb mate.
Oh,
womb mate.
Nice.
You know? Yeah, because you know the oracle at Delphi.
Right.
You know, Delphos or Delphi means womb.
Oh.
And an Adelphos is someone who is in the womb with you. That's your womb mate, your brother. So
right.
Philadelphia is quite literally the city of brotherly love.
Does Adolf have that?
No, Adolf is I think
that's
German for like hunter, I think.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
But or something like that, hunter or eagle.
So
we have something.
Have a call.
Oh, great! Here, I'll take that.
Okay, why you're gonna take the call?
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Okay.
You know, I think I bumped the receiver and accidentally hung up on the person.
Oh, all right, that's fine. They'll call back.
Yeah, they'll call back if it's important.
So the three kinds of love.
There's eros,
according to the Greeks, of course.
According to the
Greeks,
this
is a Western tradition, obviously.
Right. Well, so there's eros, which is sexual romantic love.
Yes.
And then there's philia, which is
brotherly love.
Friendship. Philadelphia.
Right.
And then there's maybe the person's calling back. I'll try not to bump the receiver this time.
Okay.
Hello.
So
we are
going to take a little musical break.
Is
then
this, say that again.
Cupid, draw back your bow and let your arrow go straight to my lover's heart. For me, my cry and let your
So, Chuck, with that dedicated song, he wants to hear Dedicated to the One I Love by the Shirelles.
Oh, okay. We don't have that.
We'll try to rustle it up for you, Chuck.
I'm in distress.
All right, thank you very much.
There's danger of me losing all of my happiness. For I love a girl who doesn't
I can get that on
exist.
All right.
You can fix Cupid, draw back your bow.
So and let we'll take requests a little bit later. Thanks for calling in, Chuck. But we're discussing love at the moment. We're getting the three kinds of love. We have erotic love, which is Eros. We have brotherly love, which is
Philia.
And we have the most enduring kind of love.
That's agape.
Agape.
Agape, which is a word in ancient Greek that became very important after the dissemination of the New Testament, of the Gospels. Because in the famous passage from John, God so loved the world, he gave it his only son. The word there in John, the Gospel of John, is agape, which is different from, eros, which is fleeting, always in a state of becoming.
Always in a state of becoming.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Interesting.
And philia, which is enduring, but not necessarily emotionally intense.
So,
and then
so
agape,
like God
agape
wants,
is
God
love.
Doesn't want to...
Yeah,
know,
no, agape
man.
Yeah, God doesn't want to stoop mankind or the world, or he doesn't want to go on a blind date with the world.
Neither does he want to be buddies.
No, God's not buddies with the world.
No.
God's relationship to the world is like the relationship between a parent and a child.
And that is agape.
Yeah, that's agape. That's the strongest kind of love. That's the kind of love that you're, stepping on if you get between a mother bear and her cubs, That's the strongest of all. But in the symposium, Socrates says we're just going to talk about Eros today, and he says everyone, let's cut the wine with water, so that we don't get too terribly drunk, and we'll all give a speech about Eros, and the speech that everyone remembers other than Socrates. Socrates is Aristophanes. And he says that back in olden times, all people used to be two people with two heads and two sets of limbs, and we rolled around on round bodies. But those people were too powerful, and so Zeus asked Hephaestus to cut them all in two.
Hephaestus, the god of the smith,
The smithy.
Who was married to Aphrodite?
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
It was kind of a Arthur Miller Marilyn Monroe relationship, and he cuts all the people in two, and that's the reason why love exists. Everyone's always rolling around looking for their second half, their other half. Rather.
Is that where my better half, or
I don't know if that's where that comes from, but I wouldn't be surprised. And then finally, Socrates is the last to speak, and he says, well. The person who taught me about the ways of love was the wise woman of Manitia, Diotima. And he says, I went on a pilgrimage to go talk to Diotima about love, and she told me that Eros is the child of poverty and resource.
So erotic love, and just like that urge, right? Is the child of poverty
and resource.
And
that's
resource.
Right. Yeah, because poverty is a constant state of need, and resource is a constant act of striving to get what you need or what you want.
And he says, that's clever.
That's the most important thing about Eros, is that it's always in a state of becoming, never in a state of being. Sort of like Woody Allen says in Annie Hall, that a relationship is like a shark; it has to always be moving. If it stops moving, it dies. And in the movie, he says, what we're dealing with here is a dead shark.
It's a dead shark, right. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I've ever fallen in love, to be honest. I think I've stepped in it a few times. But,
yeah, you stole that witticism from
I have no idea where you stole that from.
Yeah.
Is that Woody Allen?
Well, yeah. I mean, Woody Allen, like, for instance, okay, everybody always thinks that famous line, I would never belong to a club that would have me for a member. People always think that's Woody Allen.
No, it's Groucho Marx.
Well, he stole it from Groucho Marx, and Groucho Marx stole it from Mark Twain.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Did not know that. All right. Back to love. Back to love. And the Book of Love. Apparently, the entire symposium is on Eros.
Right, yeah. That's what it's all about. And Socrates eventually says the most important thing about Eros is that it's always waxing and waning. It's always dying and always coming into being. Mm. It's always on the move. That's the thing about Eros. Agape is solid. Agape is forever. Philia is more solid. It's also very, you know, structurally sound. But Eros is the most emotionally intense of all of these kinds of love, and it's always going up and down like crazy,
huh?
You know,
and why are these even considered part of the same emotion?
Well, you know, the opposite, because the opposite of love isn't hatred, it's indifference.
Ooh,
right?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, Helen Fisher, the anthropologist, describes or divides the experience of love into three parts: lust, mm-hmm. attraction, and attachment. Mm. And I mean, obviously, she's coming from out of a Western tradition.
Right. I'm not sure what the difference between lust and attraction is.
Well, lust is sort of that, you know, the initial passionate sexual desire,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, gets you going.
Uh-huh.
And then attraction is more individualized. Well, you're like, you're focusing on just mm-hmm. one person, a mm-hmm. specific person for mating.
Right.
And it develops from lust.
Hmm.
And then from that, the bond ideally it will grow into sort of attachment
mm-hmm.
where...
Right.
You know, you're with somebody, you mm-hmm. know, for forever, you know, and if you're,
uh-huh.
you know, Mormon, you're with them really forever.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, have you ever read, you know, Mary Wollstonecraft's Vindication of the Rights of Woman?
I did not. I didn't have quite the good liberal arts education.
Well, I read that in college, and then I taught it a few times when I taught FISM at Bard. Mm-hmm. I haven't taught it in a while, but it's really interesting. It was written in 1795, and it's mm-hmm. the first text of maybe what you could call proto-feminism.
Mm-hmm.
But in that book, she says that love is a bad reason to marry anyone. You shouldn't marry for love.
Well, I mean, it's only a very recent phenomenon, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
You know,
but,
I mean,
you know, and she says what's more important than love, what's more enduring, is friendship. You know, because
so she was a big champion of
philia. Yeah,
philia,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah, no, she says philia is more. You know, because she says that if you invest everything in your relationship into Eros and there's no philia in it, then
right.
what happens after Eros dies, which it eventually does, because it's got to be in a constant state of moving, or else
right.
it dies.
Right, right.
And what replaces Eros when love fades is you know, jealousy and bitterness and anger. Anger and resentment and all of those things that sort of move in to replace love after it fades. But
so
if the basis of your relationship is not Eros but philia, that's the basis for a more healthy, lasting marriage.
Huh, interesting. Well, I mean, of course, up till very recently, marriages were arranged.
Right, and I mean, many parts of the world still are.
The commitment was what came first. Here we do, you know, we do the sort of lust, attraction, commitment,
right?
And in the West, for the most part, and
right,
and but earlier, also in the West, it was commitment mm-hmm. and whatever the other stuff.
Whatever else happens, yeah.
Well, that reminds me of a song, Ben. Hang on.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Oh, he's a good man. I like him. He's a little crazy, but I like him. What's more important, Puddle likes. Puddle loves. So what can we do? It's a new world, though. A new world.
love. Older, do you love me?
Do I what?
Do you love me?
Do I love you?
Well?
With our daughters getting married and this trouble in the town, you're upset, you're worn out. Go inside, go lie down. Maybe it's indigestion.
No, Golda, I'm asking you a question. Do you love me?
You're a fool.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love you?
Well.
For 25 years I've washed your clothes, cooked your meals, cleaned your house, given you children, milked your cow. After 25 years, why talk about love right now?
Golden, the first time I met you was on our wedding day. I was scared.
I was shy.
I was nervous.
So was I.
But my father and my mother said we'd learn to love each other. And now I'm asking, Golden, do you love me?
I'm your wife.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love him?
Well?
For 25 years I've lived with him, fought with him, starved with him. 25 years my bed is his. If that's not love, what is?
And you love me.
I suppose I do.
Oh. And I suppose I love you too.
Oh.
that's
from Fiddler,
yeah,
Fiddler on the Roof.
Back in the days when all matches were arranged.
Yeah.
You know? Well, I sometimes think that's not necessarily a bad system, you know. Is there any reason to think why people would be better at picking their own partners than having, their parents or whoever arrange it for them? Or maybe just drawing random, you know, lots?
I think random lots is the best.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think that would probably be best.
I think random lots.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. You know, it's... Yeah.
Oh,
as long as you don't have to move. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you like to bring Eros, Mr. Eros, in here right now
before we
play the Shirelles for Chuck, if that's a possibility?
You want to bring Eros in?
Sure.
Oh, you invited a guest?
Oh yes, yes. You know, well, we've got the intergalactic time machine. And Eros is coming in right now. Did you hear the sound of that door? I don't know if it was audible on the radio, but
hey, how's it going?
This is Eros. So thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah,
Eros.
You're welcome. You're welcome. No problem. I don't have a lot of time, so. If,
well, you're always in a state of becoming. Right?
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, whatever.
Uh-huh. Well, welcome.
Thanks.
Nice shirt. Is that new?
It's velour. It's it feels like velvet. You like it? It's nice.
Yeah.
Come on, touch it. It's nice.
Well,
here,
I don't know. I don't know if I want to touch it.
Come on. It's just like velvet. Touch it. Do I have to touch it?
Yeah.
Come on, touch it. You know you want to touch it. You know you want to touch it.
All right. Look,
come on, touch
just,
it.
Just don't
touch
don't, it. Don't move. I'll reach over there and touch it, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
It's nice, huh?
Yeah,
not too bad.
No, it is nice.
Yeah.
So.
Thanks for noticing. I appreciate it. It's new. I like the V-neck.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
How have you been?
I've been all right, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit of this and that.
shooting some arrows at... You know,
nymphs. I don't want to talk about work, really.
All right, I'm sorry. Well, wait, that's why we brought you in here.
All right, I'll talk a little bit. Go on.
All right. How are the wife and kids, your folks?
I didn't want to talk about that.
You don't want to talk about your personal life?
No, I mean, like, Psyche and Hedona, they're fine. I don't know what Hedona's doing. She's always, like, she's crazy.
And Psyche, she's Psyche, you know, like, yeah. But she's good. I like her. She's, I love her. What do I say? I love her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have you been up to lately?
What
have you been doing?
I just, you know, like, you know, this and that, you know, I get around. I've been around, you know, like, it's nothing in particular, you know.
All right. So we have some questions from our listeners here.
You got questions from your listeners? All right. All right. Yeah. I'm Eros. Uh-huh. You know, I'm the root, like, erotic.
Oh, yeah. The first part of the word erotic is your name.
I know. That's me.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you feel erotic?
Sometimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the time. Yeah. 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 It's not easy being Eros.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's, I sweat a lot, especially in this velour.
Yeah. All right. Janine from Catskill asks, by the way, these are our, email questions that have been sent in that I'm looking at our laptop right now. Janine from Catskill asks, why do fools fall in love?
That's a stupid question, Janine. I mean, who else is going to fall in love? I mean, love makes you a fool, doesn't it? Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you weren't a fool going in, you're going to be a fool going out. That's it. Super. Right. Next question.
All right. Jerome from Athens. This is Athens, New York.
Wants
to know. Yeah.
You got one of them?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we also have.
Because I'm from Athens, too.
I know. We also have a Rome and a Milan and a Cairo. But we call them Milan and Cairo.
Oh, Cairo. Cairo, I know. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Jerome from Athens wants to know, will he still love me tomorrow?
I hate to break it to you, Jerome. He doesn't love you now.
You could have gotten that from a magic eight ball.
Yeah.
Renee from Akard wonders, how will I know if he really loves me?
He doesn't. He doesn't love you, Renee. I'm sorry. walk away. Seriously, Renee, walk away.
Aren't you Eros? Shouldn't you be encouraging foolish love instead of, you know, telling people to get over it?
It's what I feel right now. It's what I feel right now. Like, just, you know, Renee, walk away. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Louis from Hunter Tannersville asks, how deep is your love?
It's about this deep.
That's very helpful on the radio.
Well, let me, you know, it's maybe like this deep.
Well,
I don't know. How long is a piece of string? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on the piece of string.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Finally, Ludmilla from Chatham is curious if she will feel the love tonight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're going to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. You're gonna feel the love tonight. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow morning, you might have some problems, but tonight,
you're gonna feel the love.
Okay. Right. Hey, I gotta run, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
I gotta be in Tivoli, Eros. In like 20 minutes. So.
AKA Cupid.
Okay. Yeah. Take it easy, buddy.
All right. All right. Great. Good to see you as always.
It's like a hurricane. It happens in Florida. It gets into everything. Love. It's like a monster truck. Fills up whole stadiums. But it crushes smaller trucks. It's like a mama said, it may be small and cute, but sometimes it eats its young. Love, it's like a trailer park, a ugly but functional. The rent is cheap enough. Love, oh, it's like an interstate. It gets you from place to place, but it's littered with dead raccoons. Love, it's like a garbage man. It collects waste and fill, and it smells like rotting flesh. Love, it's like a newborn child. Seems interesting when it's young, gets pedestrian after a while. And love, it's like a hurricane. It happens in Florida. It destroys
That was It Happens in Florida from The Burning Hell, one of my favorite love songs.
Yeah, it's a great song.
We had a special guest tonight. We had a caller. Mm-hmm. We had a classic, mm-hmm. Screw up at the beginning. And,
oh, yeah.
And we're about to try another one to try mm-hmm. and get our listener in his request.
Oh, yeah.
While I'm doing this... Ben, why don't you...
Should I read a love poem?
Yes, of course. Let's do the classic. Shall we do the classic?
The classic, the Shakespeare sonnets?
I'm
going to now read Shakespeare's Sonnet 116. As you know, I won't tell you what a sonnet is. I'll just read it for you. Let me not to the marriage of true minds... Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love, which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh no, it is an ever fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark, whose worth is unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error, and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved. Thank you.
That was very nice, Ben.
Thank you. I didn't write it.
Oh,
But the dramatic reading was.
But my
was
my feeling is that a little bit of all of those pieces of love were in there, right?
I think so. Yeah.
You know, love not alters when it alteration finds, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that certainly is not Eros, right?
Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds.
Yeah.
You know, well, you know. There is, what is this? I read this in an essay by Roland Barthes once. It's in The Lover's Discourse, I think. And it has to do with Oh, who was the writer? I can't remember, but it was some French writer who we said, I'll think of it maybe if you know, we play a song and and it comes to me. But there was he quotes this essay, or maybe it was a diary entry by this French writer who was walking. Ah, it was Stendhal. Pardon me. It was Stendhal who was yeah. It was Stendhal who was walking in Italy near a salt mine with an Italian a captain. He was some sort of officer, and I'll show you how to work that in a moment. And the Italian officer, he was walking there with his friend, who was a woman, a lady who. Was a very beautiful woman. She was some sort of countess, and she was very beautiful except for the fact that she had this mangled, deformed hand. The Italian officer praised it was taken with her, and he was falling in love with her as they were walking around in these salt mines, and he was praising every little thing about her, and then eventually got around to praising her deformed hand, and as they were walking on the salt mines, the officer showed them this thing that was a puddle of salty water at the bottom of the mine, where there were you could put a stick in it and leave it for a while, and when you pulled the stick out, it was covered in these fine salt crystals. And he said, that is a perfect metaphor for love. You put an ordinary stick in this pool full of salt, and you pull it out, and it looks like it's covered in glittery crystals. It takes everything plain and ugly and covers it in the appearance of precious stones. Mm. That's like what love does. And he says to his friend, the Countess, he says, that's sort of like what this Italian officer felt for you. He even thought your disgusting, ugly, deformed hand was beautiful because he was in love with you.
Huh.
It's sort of like when you dip a stick in a salty pool and it comes back covered in crystals.
My guess is Stendhal didn't really do too well with the ladies. Come on, baby, let me dip you in salt, you ugly stick.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, all right, let's see if we can.
I'll show you how to do that. Just press the button on the top, not that one, the one on the top. The one on the, there, yeah. Press that once, and then press the little,
All right, here we go.
Great.
This is for...
This is for Chuck. Mm-hmm. And try wiggling that jack in there a little bit. There we go. And hold it in there. Just like love.
This is dedicated
All right. Well, that was dedicated to someone Chuck loves.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
No, that was dedicated to Chuck, and we love Chuck. Phil Spector produced that, didn't he?
Yeah.
One of my favorite parodies of that song was a song that was recorded by a really druggy band from the 90s called the Crystal Method, and their parody was titled Medicated to the One I Love.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Shall we return to the Book of Love?
To Thoughts of Love.
Yeah, Thoughts of
when
Love.
When a young man's mind turns to thoughts of love in the spring, or in this case, the summer, the August.
I thought, well, why wait till February, right?
Uh-huh. This is an interesting erotic fact about human beings.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah, human beings are one of the very, very few mammals that we know of that mates all the time, not just when in heat. Yeah, like, you know, you have a dog, right?
I do.
Well, is she, I'm sure
yeah,
she's,
no, she's spayed.
Yeah. But if she weren't,
yeah,
you would notice that the dogs only have sex in the spring when they're in heat.
Right.
That's when it's mating season.
Right.
Just like salmon only spawn when it's mating season.
Right.
But human beings, bonobos, chimpanzees, and dolphins, and I believe those are the only only mammals that we know of,
right,
that mate all year round, no matter what.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
No. So, really, we have love on the brain all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what kind of love?
Eros. You know, we're talking about love. We could also talk about philia and agape.
Yeah.
Although, I guess there's just less to say about that.
Yeah.
Well, that's why, you know, that's why all the pop songs in the rock, they're all about love. They're all about eros. Like, very few people write songs about philia and agape. They're just... you know, not as fruitful material to mine for
well, what
for
about
drama?
I mean, I would classify almost every patriotic song as a
as
a song of agape.
Yeah, but I mean,
all paeans to God, right?
Uh-huh, yeah,
are agape.
Are about agape.
Sure.
Yeah. So okay,
but
so,
what I find weird sometimes is sort of the eroticism of a lot of sort of Jesus songs.
Well, as was famously pointed out in South Park, if you want to turn any pop song into a Christian rock song, all you have to do is take a song and replace the word baby with Jesus. Hit me, Jesus, one more time.
Right. Yeah.
Jesus, you can drive my car.
Jesus, you can drive my car. Right, mm-hmm. Right. Shake it up, Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. we're going to get some calls. So, but again, we're also talking about the Western tradition. I when I was sort of doing mm-hmm. the minimal amount of research I do for the show, under which uh-huh. I will try and do more than the minimum next time.
I don't mind.
Yeah, I know, but I do.
Yeah.
In Mandarin.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
The word.
You've got
the word
this
for the word for love
mm-hmm.
is not really used the way we use it. Like the word
right.
for like there's a different word mm-hmm. for eros,
uh-huh.
right? And agape, as in Greek.
Well, as
I
in
suppose.
Greek.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe it's a problem with English that we have the same word for all of these things.
Right. Oh. Mm-hmm. Wow. I hadn't thought of that. But I think it's changing as sort of Western and English influences mm-hmm. Chinese culture. But say I love you
mm-hmm.
to a woman or a guy that you're romantically involved with.
What do you say?
You would say, I like you. You know, I mean,
uh-huh. I love you to your children or your relatives?
Yeah,
or whatever?
You would because... Yeah. Because love has a tremendous weight of responsibility.
That makes sense.
You don't say it lightly, you know, which
right.
I respect.
I
right?
can understand that, yeah.
You know.
Well, a lot of these things are culturally determined. I mean, I know, for instance, Japanese people, for example. I don't know about different Chinese cultures, but in Japanese culture, kissing was something that was only recently introduced by Western pop culture, you know, in media.
Really?
Yeah. Before American movies made it to Japan, Japanese people never kissed. It was just not done.
Huh.
They did other things, but they didn't kiss on the mouth in a romantic way.
Huh.
Yeah. It's not a universal thing.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That explains a lot. Sorry. Well, I'm gonna play a song that is a pop song, and it does celebrate agape.
Sunday choir. Oh, my mama loves me. She loves me. She get down on her knees and hug me. Oh, she loves me like a rock. She rocks me like a rock. Oh, baby, she don't love me. She loves me, loves me, loves me, loves me. When I was grown to be a man, and the devil would call my name. Say now, who do, who do you think you're fooling?
Oh,
I'm a consummated man.
Oh, man.
Snatching in a purity. My mama loves me. She loves me. She get down on her knees and hug me. Oh, she love me like a rock. She rocked me like a rock.
Paul Simon's "Ode to Agape."
Is that song? That's Simon and Garfunkel. That's not.
No,
just
no,
Paul
that's
Simon.
Paul Simon. That's from "There Goes Rhymin' Simon."
Oh.
I think it was his first solo album, or maybe his second solo album.
It was Paul Simon. He had an evangelical phase, didn't he? Same with like Bob Dylan in the '70s, or maybe that was '80s Dylan.
Yeah, no, he just took from everybody. He just took from everybody. Yeah.
Like Rhythm of the Saints, like half that album is about Jesus, isn't it?
It's about, you know, mm-hmm. taking stuff from Brazilians.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
No. He's a complicated character.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's do we have anything else to cover with Plato's book on Eros, Symposium? Mm-hmm. We're talking about sort of
humans were,
according to
Aristophanes, yeah.
humans were originally one mm-hmm. being, and
right.
then Zeus said, oh, you were just way too powerful,
uh-huh,
and he sent Hephaestus,
cut them in two,
right. crippled uh-huh. god of this of smithing.
Yeah, a.k.a. in Roman times, Vulcan.
Vulcan,
yeah,
right.
God of volcanoes.
Yeah, who was also married to Aphrodite, who
That's
messed
right.
around with him. With Ares a lot.
Right, yeah.
And according to some traditions, mm-hmm. They are the parents of Eros.
Right.
But another tradition is actually Eros is mm-hmm. one of the first gods. Like that, they recognize that primal force, that urge,
right,
as something essential.
The primal urging, right?
The primal urging. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to use that if I ever get another date.
Right. Well, so in the symposium,
so they're all going around talking about
And then finally, Socrates talks about one of the interesting things about the symposium is that Socrates spends his entire speech quoting a female character who's not present, Diotima, the wise woman of Manteia.
So it's earliest written proof of mansplaining.
Sort of. I mean, one of the interesting things about it is that that most of his speech is taken up by this quote, this long quotation from a female character, and she says, "Eros is the child of poverty and resource, always waxing and waning, always dying, always being born." All right, we have another phone call, and Kevin's going to answer it, let's see. It's always dying, always being born, and
we don't got time. We're gonna roll.
But that was Chuck again.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck.
Uh-huh. Did he say?
He wants to dedicate another song, but we only have 9 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And I want to finish up on the symposium, and right. I want to play one of my favorite love songs of all time.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what it is. So Socrates gives his speech, which eventually winds up being about life, the universe, and everything, which always happens when Socrates speaks in a Platonic dialogue. And he says that what love is the primal urging that urges begetting. But then there's another kind of love, a love for immortality,
ooh,
which is the love that ultimately results in the desire to build up human civilization. It's the love that inspires art and literature and politics and everything, you know. And he says, and that is a higher kind of love.
The greatest love of all.
The greatest love of all.
Yeah.
And then Alcibiades bursts in at the last minute. And
Alcibiades, the famous Greek general.
Yeah, the famous general. And Alcibiades is drunk as a skunk, and he exhorts he says, what are you squares doing here? Nobody's drunk enough. And he says, bring in the wine and don't cut it with water. And then all the slaves come in with the bowl full of wine, and they all start basically doing the ancient Greek equivalent of shotgunning beers, and then Alcibiades says, "Let me tell you all a story about Socrates." And everyone says, "Oh, Alcibiades is going to give a speech now," because they told him that they'd been giving speeches dedicated to Eros all night. And he says, "Socrates is unlike any man that's ever walked the earth." He says, back when we were in the army, back a long time ago, when we were doing the campaign against whatever, I Socrates and I, we went everywhere together. We were like two peas in a pod. And basically, Alcibiades says, he had a thing for Socrates, because ancient Greek, they're talking about homosexual love the whole time. That's real love in Athens, right?
Oh.
And he says, and love, the kind of love they're talking about that between a lover and a beloved, or as one of my students at the University of Iowa put it, the pitcher and the catcher. I was like, absolutely. He was a baseball player. It's love between an older man and a younger man. You've heard this about ancient Greek culture.
Yeah.
And Socrates was the older man, and Alcibiades was the younger man. But Alcibiades was doing the pitching, and Socrates wasn't doing the catching.
Ooh, We're treading on thin ice, but go on.
What? This is we're talking about classical Greek literature.
We are, I suppose, yes.
But anyway, he says Socrates has a heart made of stone. He says there's something wrong with him. He says, I put it all out on the table. Socrates never picked up what I was laying down. And furthermore, not only does he have a heart of stone, but he's unlike anyone else. He says that he can talk all night and not get tired. He can drink all night and not get drunk. He is not human. And then Alcibiades, that's basically what ends the dialogue. And
Socrates is not human.
Yeah.
I'll go with that. Well, We only got a few minutes. Thanks.
Haven't you ever known somebody who can somehow just you know, outlast everyone and not feel tired one bit, out-talk anyone and drink everyone under the table without ever seeming to get drunk? That kind of you know, that kind of person.
Yeah. I mean, for a time.
Uh-huh.
For a time.
Yeah. Alcibiades said Socrates is like that.
Those people often don't.
Don't age well. we never got to find out how Socrates aged because he had to drink the hemlock.
Well, that's one thing he drank, and it he had a him in. But
well, that was in the Apology. That's the one of the last Platonic dialogue where the Athenians convict him for corrupting the youth of Athens, and they give him the option of either drinking the hemlock
or apologizing,
aka poison, or exile. And he says, "I could never live outside of Athens. Give me the hemlock."
Great. So, we have managed to like love. There were moments I will cherish forever, and others I would really care to forget from this past hour. But I would like to leave everybody with one of my favorite love songs. It's a duet. Mm-hmm. And one of my complaints of this station is that we really never get enough Ethel Merman.
Never.
But we're going to get some now.
Just the right amount.
I hear singing, and there's no one there. I smell blossoms and the trees are bare. All day long I seem to walk on air. I wonder why, I wonder why. I keep tossing in my sleep at night. And what's more, I've lost my appetite. Stars that used to twinkle in the skies are twinkling in my eyes. I wonder why.
You don't need analyzing. It is not so surprising that you feel very strange but nice. Your heart goes pitter-patter. I know just what's the matter because I've been there once or twice. Put your head on my shoulder. You need someone who's older. A rub down with a velvet glove. Nothing you can take to relieve that pleasant ache. You're not sick, you're just in love. You don't need analyzing. It is not so surprising that you feel very strange but nice. Your heart goes pitter-patter. I know just what's the matter because I've been there once or twice. Put your head on my shoulder, need someone who's older, rub down with a velvet glove. There is nothing you can take to relieve that pleasant pain. You're not sick, you're just in love.
Singing and there's no
it is not so surprising that you feel very strange but nice. Your heart goes pitter-patter. I know just what's the matter because I've been there once or twice. Put your head on my shoulder. Need someone who's older. I'll rub down with a bell's bell. There is nothing you can take to relieve that pleasant ache.